it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Mattes, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Tim Legler. Legs, I always like talking hoops with you, but I especially like talking nuggets with you, so I'm excited for today.
You should be excited. I know you're probably, you're back to breathing normally. Yep. That got a little bit dicey last night. Listen, I didn't think that was a game played by either team, like at their peak level, until the last like 6 minutes. Then it was unbelievable. Yeah. Like the ending of that game was incredible. I was underwhelmed up to that point, but the finish to that was sensational both ways, really, with the shot making. And of course, obviously Jamal Murray, man, proves once again that he likes deciding matters. Big shot by him. But yeah, Nuggets move on. We expected it. You did not want to get this thing to a game six because there was a very good chance this was going to be a seven-game series. If that happened, Nuggets took care of business when they had to, and they move on because Minnesota's getting a ton of rest, and now the Nuggets will get almost as much.
Yeah, it should be. That's going to be a great series. We'll kind of quickly touch on that. We'll get into that more later in the week, but we'll do the postmortem on the Lakers. We're also going to talk about Heat Celtics, and we're going to talk about the Pelicans and where they go from here as the Thunder sweep them. But first, we are presented, as always, by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. So, Legs, it's a five-game gentleman sweep. After sweeping the Lakers last year, it's a gentleman sweep. The joke last year was that it was the closest sweep in NBA history. Every game could have gone the other direction. This one was a five-game series, and no joke, it was very close. It felt the exact same way. Like, if you're a Denver fan, I'm curious how inspired you are, how confident you are walking out of that. But at the end of the day, this Nuggets team knows exactly who they are, and it is most revealed during those clutch moments. And Jamal Murray, who did not have a very good series overall, playing on one leg in this game, very, high-publicized left calf strain, he still was able to put up 32 points, including the game winner. So let's just stick to this game for now. What stood out to you about this game, game five?
I think I was concerned about the Nuggets early because I texted you. I'm like, why are they playing so slow? It looked like a team that was in – I remember in that one year being in the NBA Finals when the Heat were playing the Mavericks. I was in the building. Do you remember when the air conditioning went out?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? In the LeBron cramp game?
Did the air conditioning go out? Did somebody turn it off? Did somebody turn it off?
I don't know. I don't know what happened. I know this. I was in the building and I did all pregame. I had no postgame. So I was literally sitting up like in the ESPN suite where the production was set up. And I had like a cocktail in my hand. I was watching the game as a fan and I was drenched. My shirt was drenched. It was incomprehensible to me that these guys were playing. And the reason I bring that up is it looked like somebody turned the air off in the building. The Denver Nuggets looked gassed. They looked so tired. There was no push. When they're good, man, and that ball comes off the glass, and sometimes it's even make or miss, and they get that first surge up the court, right? And they get into something really quick hitting, and they get something up fast. That's the Nuggets at their best. And I didn't see really any of that. I felt like for the first three quarters, and I was a little concerned about them being able to finish the game, but man, they somehow found that second win. They found their juice. They found their energy. And a bunch of guys made plays in the fourth quarter. Murray made the biggest plays in terms of shooting, but there were a lot of other massive contributions made. Yeah. Guys making shots, or in the case of Aaron Gordon, one of the biggest offensive rebounds he'll grab all year. An incredible play. KCP with a big shot. Of course, Jokic and Murray doing their normal share. So it was a team effort in the fourth, and they put the ball in the hands of, you know, that two-man game, as Mike Malone said after. No timeout. I trust those guys inherently. Best two-man action in basketball. Go get something good, and Jamal Murray did.
And it mirrored game two. No timeout in that moment as well. It was just a, hey, you got the ball. The clock's winding down. No timeout needed. Don't let anybody game plan. Just go down there and do your thing. And it was funny. After the game, Jamal Murray was asked what was different about this one. And he said, this time I went left, which I thought was so
right,
funny.
Right. And I actually had an opportunity. I drew this play up on Van Pelt last night. We talked about the play. And so I was talking about some of the things that – what the small details of that play that made it important. One was what you just said. You know, the first time they was two-man action with that side cleared out, but he went toward the corner, got the switch, hit the fadeaway. And this time he comes up and he takes the ball toward the sideline and he points at KCP and says, get out. I want you to go to the other side of the floor because I want this whole side to myself. I think that's their best action. The two-man game with that side empty and Murray coming to the middle of the floor so that Jokic has that entire side. If you force Murray to give it up, he's going to kick it to Jokic, who's going to have space to either shoot a little shot or he can quickly go into a spin game, back you down. But there's nobody in the corner to get into his lap or on the wing to sink down. He's got the whole side to himself. So I love the spacing on the action. I love the read. And then one last thing I pointed out, that I don't know if you noticed this, but I thought it was important. As Murray goes toward the sideline, Adam, Anthony Davis is jammed up on Jokic. He's got his arm around him. And it told me if Jokic goes to set this screen, AD was going to ride him over there and then jump out. And it was going to be a hard hedge, maybe even a trap, because we were getting deep into the clock. Jokic did this interesting thing. It was almost like a swim move with his arm. So he didn't fully extend to push him in the chest to get him off of him, which could have drawn an offensive foul. He did it without really extending his arms, but he swung his right arm over, bumped him a little bit, got him back on his heels, and then ran over to the screen. And the result was he had about 6 feet of space he created between himself and Anthony Davis, and that forced Anthony Davis into drop coverage. At that point, because by that point, Murray was coming off the screen. If AD tried to run out there and hedge, Murray was going to go right around a seven-footer out there. So Davis had no choice but to sort of change his angle and now head back toward the paint to cut Jamal Murray off. And it ended up being he couldn't get there. He didn't affect the shot. Murray pulled up like 12 feet and hits the game winner. But it was like a little subtle thing that Jokic did to create separation, to go set the screen, to give Jamal Murray more space when he came off. And I thought it was a really smart move, and it was probably not a lot of people picked up on it.
There's so much we could break down in that final play, because why is Denver so good in the clutch? Why is it that they always win these games, these close ones, and when they get the ball, no timeout needed, you know what to do? The reason is not only do you have the perfect guys spacing the floor, two shooters and a guy in the dunker, not only do you have a perfect pick and roll, point guard and center, you know, that play off each other, and they have the chemistry to know everything, but both guys are so crafty in those details that you're talking about. Jokic knows Anthony Davis is pushing us into a spot that's going to lower our odds of scoring here by 10%. He's pushing it too far up the floor. The shot's going to end up being farther and everything's. So Jokic, to your point, I love it, because in the bubble when they played the Lakers, Jokic was in foul trouble a lot in that series, and Dwight Howard was getting physical with him. And I remember one call specifically. Dwight Howard has his arm across his chest, just like Anthony Davis did last night. And Jokic grabbed his arm and pushed it up over him like this. And they called a foul on Jokic. They called a foul, say he can't move his arm, which I thought was weird, because I thought you owned, you know, sort of your space. But Jokic learned from that the thing you're talking about. Okay, if I can't touch his arm, if I can't push it off, then I'm going to put my arms up and around and then walk through. So now he is grabbing me or holding me, and he's forced to sort of remove his hand. As soon as he removes his hand, you carve out a little bit of space, you push it lower, and it's all just, we're talking percentage points. Your odds of making that shot go up from 45% to 47% or 48%, because you lowered the screen now just a little bit lower. So I think you're 100% right. This is why the Nuggets are so good. They did not play well in this series. And I tip my hat to the Lakers, because I think the Lakers gave them all they could handle, made life difficult for them. I thought Anthony Davis did a fantastic job defending Nikola Jokic. I know it's crazy when you see Jokic's numbers, but he did a great job against him. But Denver just owns the percentage points. How do you turn a 40% play into a 45% play, a 45% play into a 50% play? They own that, and it's why in the clutch you have so much faith in them to not necessarily make every shot, but to give them the best chance to make every shot.
Completely agree. It's a luxury, you know, a few coaches have, because number one, they've got skill sets that complement each other and are also complete in that they can score on different platforms. They can get to the rim off an ISO. They can shoot a mid-range. They can shoot a deep shot. Both of those guys can do all three things. So that's a luxury. Not all coaches have two players that they can trust that have the skill set required. Whatever the situation dictates, that's the play, and your skill is going to allow you to do it. But it's also the IQ to read what that is. That's the other thing that you have to have, and they have it. So Mike Malone's got a luxury at his disposal, and he knows it, and that's why you don't take the time out, man. You don't want to give Darvin Ham or LeBron, probably more likely in that huddle, an opportunity to really be able to dictate terms to the Nuggets, expecting something, and now, okay, here's what we're going to do to force them into countering, and maybe you make somebody make a mistake and you don't get off as good a shot. By just playing like that right out of the backcourt, let's get into it, and then trusting two players to get into action that complements each other, because this is different than some other teams that have two stars too, because they're independent of each other, like a Tatum and a Brown. You're not going to see Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown run a two-man game in that situation, right? They're independent of each other. There'll be somebody else in one of those guys handling the ball. But in this case, your two best players actually are the ones that complement each other, aren't engaged in the action. It's a tremendous benefit, an advantage that the Denver Nuggets have over every other team in the league.
The Nuggets had a 163 offensive rating in the three clutch games in this series. That's according to Jason Timpf. 163 is insane, Legs. Like a 120 offensive rating in the clutch is, oh my God, you're probably the best team in the NBA in the clutch. 163, you're almost scoring a basket every time in the clutch. And clutch is last 5 minutes of a game within 5 points. So when the game is on the line, you're scoring basically every time down court. That's just unheard of. That's the connectedness of this team. Michael Porter Jr. was huge in the series.
Man, you know, just shot on,
and in this game was probably his best one. He goes 5 of 7 from three, has 12 points in the third quarter when, you know, Denver's so good in the fourth quarter, but you got to keep it close. That third quarter, Denver actually won in large part because of how well he shot the ball. I think he was 4 of 5 from the field or from the 3-point line in that quarter alone. What did you see from him? And to me, I'm gonna set you up with this. I think he's doing such a better job of attacking closeouts this year. That's the big difference to me. Last year, jump shooter, he puts it on the floor. You're a little worried about what's going to happen. He's looked very smooth, not on complex moves, not dancing with the ball, but hey, you overclosed out because I'm shooting 50% in the series. One or two dribbles, get to the rim and finish with athleticism. That's what I see. But what stands out to you in this series from Michael Porter?
I just think that there's a confidence level now there with him when he's sprinting from point A to point B, and it's going to be a dribble handoff or a kick out from the post or a throw ahead in transition, and he's running from point to point. The anticipation of the release is so crystal clear in his mind now, and I think that that just comes with having some success, you know, being an important cog in a championship-level team that's expected to win, and you're an important part of that, and you've played well in pressure moments. I mean, it all comes with the territory. You know, you get a little bit older. You get a little bit more maturity. You've been through some adversity, and now you're on this team that, you know, are so confident in these moments. So I just see from start to finish every game, Michael Porter Jr. now is a guy that I just look at. He's a problem now. Like, he is a big part of it. It's not anymore like, hey, if Michael Porter Jr. plays well, or every time you talk about the Nuggets before, you talk about X factors. Well, if Michael Porter Jr. does this, right, that's how you talked about him. And I don't talk about him that way anymore. It's a given. I expect these nights. I don't use those terms to describe him anymore. I think that's the breakthrough for a young player. When you're not listed as an X factor anymore, you're just a factor. And that's where Michael Porter Jr. is now.
Yeah, I love that. Let's talk about the Nuggets now and just how they looked overall. So let's start with, you know, the concern that you mentioned, and I agree with you. They do look tired to me. Jamal Murray missed a lot of time in the last month of the season, comes back basically at the end, and he's banged up. You know, he gets the calf injury. He did not really shake anybody in this series. You know, he would shake him a little bit, just enough to get his shot off, but there wasn't a lot of, like, downhill getting to the rim because he blew by his guy. Not a lot of blow-bys from Jamal in this series. Jokic looked tired. I mean, he put up insane numbers. Jokic's the hardest player to analyze, honestly, because you know, he put up 28 points, 16 rebounds, 10 assists, you know, 28 point triple double and shot 60% from the field. And yet I felt like he was sluggish. Even in this game, we were texting each other, why is Jokic not going? Go at him, like, be more aggressive. So he looks tired. KCP rolls an ankle last night. Reggie Jackson rolled an ankle earlier in the series. So if I look at Denver, it's hard to repeat, in large part because of how exhausting it is, how taxing it is to play that long. And when I look at Denver, that's the one difference from last year and this year, is it felt like they were fresh and had this energy about them, whereas this year they definitely feel like they are wearing a weighted vest when they play. That's one of my concerns.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I will say this, Jokic made a liar out of me yesterday, because I did a lot of pregame hits, SportsCenter and others, talking about the game, what to expect. And I said, listen, it's 3-1. You don't want this series to linger. Very good chance Minnesota, Minnesota's, you know, has swept. They've moved on. They're going to be rested. So now you want to get this over with. And to me, that means Jokic coming out and being hyper-aggressive as a scorer. And, like, basically saying, like, just this is how it's going to go tonight. And he didn't. He was very hesitant to kind of get into his offense early in the game. And I thought he, more than anybody, typified what I'm talking about, with looking slow and sluggish and tired and just not looking like he had a lot of energy. And he found it later. And he's like, again, it's crazy to say, think that I'm saying this, and the guy had 25, 20, and 9. I mean, it's absurd to think about, you know, well, my goodness, what would he have done if he actually had a lot of pep in his step? But I thought he was going to attack this game differently than he did at the start. And who knows why? I think he's a hard guy to figure out. It's not like he gives answers to these questions. He just gets the win and moves on to the next one. And that's that. I do have a question for you about their team in general. And I noticed, you know, Peyton Watson getting 5 minutes last night. Can you kind of amplify that, expand upon that? Because he's a guy that prior to that had played between 12 and 16 minutes in the other four games. I think he's a very important part. I know how much you love him. I don't know if he's one of your guys, you know, that you talk about around the rest of the league, but you know, he seems like he'd be that kind of guy that would be on a team like that. What was up with that last night? It gives them depth. It gives them fresh legs. It gives them athleticism. Like, did he lose a little bit of confidence in him because he was 0-for-3 in the last game? Like, why did Peyton Watson only play 5 minutes, which could have been something to give them a little bit more energy and maybe give those guys a little bit more of a blow?
I think this is really just a Michael Malone question, a Michael Malone thing. And that is, you know, we saw this last year in the closeout game against the Lakers specifically, that Michael Malone, when it was time to close out, they went to the shortest rotation possible, six guys, and just said, hey, we're going to get it done. I mean, you get 46 minutes from Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter, 40 plus minutes from Jokic and Murray. And then KCP probably would have played more, but he rolled his ankle. So he had to come out of the game, and you play Reggie more minutes. So I think that this is just a Michael Malone thing, when he senses — you had 3 days off if you do lose and you go to game six, but you sensed if you have to go to LA, you're in trouble right now. Now you have to win on the road where you just blew one at home. So I think he sensed that this was a chance to close them out, and starters were just going to play as many minutes as possible. And so I don't think it was anything Peyton Watson did, and more that he just has so much faith in his starting lineup. That's my hunch. You know, Christian Brown was last year in the playoffs, Denver had Bruce Brown attacking D'Angelo Russell, and it completely nullified D'Angelo Russell's value, because D'Lo can make some shots, but he can't guard. In this game, they were trying to have Christian Brown attack him off the dribble, and he just couldn't do it. He doesn't have the skill to do it. So I think Michael Malone looked at that and said, we have to make the Lakers adjust. We have to keep our starters out there so that they don't ever get an opportunity to try to play through D'Lo or do any of that. And so I don't think it was anything he did poorly. I just think it was the closeout game, and he sensed it was now or never.
That's great, good information, I think, because I think you would agree with this. I think he's going to be somebody that's important in the next series. Because of the length and athleticism of their wings. And, you know, you need something to kind of counter that. So I think he's going to be important in the next series. By the way, I thought Reggie Jackson gave you guys some good minutes last night.
First half, know, especially.
Yeah, he did. And what's interesting about that is, like, okay, so he has 18 minutes, 8 points. And it's funny how you can do that line that I just said, 3-for-8, 2-for-6 from three, 8 points, 18 minutes. Like, nothing mind-blowing. But, like, to me, was a significant contribution in the game. And you can have that exact stat line in 18 minutes in an important playoff game. It's so much more impactful than averaging 16 for, like, the Hornets this year. You know what I mean? When no one's paying attention. Like, that's what playoff basketball does. It's all about moments in time. And night to night is a fresh slate. All that matters is winning. All that matters is on that given night, do you have something to help your team, whether it's 6, 8, 10, 12 minutes or whatever it may be? Do you have a positive contribution that you know, gives your team a good minutes during that stretch? And I thought he did it last night. And a night with Jamal Murray, we were all kind of wondering, you know, we didn't know exactly what we were going to see out of Jamal Murray. He ended up being great. I guess that's, you know, best game of the series for Jamal Murray, yep, the way it finished. But, you know, we didn't know going in. And Reggie Jackson, I thought, gave them some good minutes, man, in the 18 that he played. I thought he was solid.
I'm going to make you do something. I know you – this is the last time you're going to have to do it, Legs, which is talk about the Lakers here, especially in such a positive way. They were not a good team last year, but they went to the conference finals. And they did it in large part because LeBron James and Anthony Davis in a playoff series for throughout the regular season. Those guys are tough. LeBron is tough, man. Even at his age, 44 minutes last night, 30 points, 9 rebounds, 11 assists, 4 steals. He was such a major impact. You know, he's tough. Is there any chance? Because the Nuggets did not look great in this series, even though they won. They looked like a veteran championship team, but they didn't necessarily look like a juggernaut. Is it possible that the Lakers are just a lot better than we give them credit for? Because they were not great in the regular season. But is it possible you get in the playoffs and it's Anthony Davis is probably Jokic's toughest matchup? LeBron James, one of the best players in the world and one of the best strategy-wise toughest guys to go up against. So is it possible the Lakers made the Nuggets look bad? And, you know, don't read too much into that. They won in 5 against a good duo.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that point. I think that's exactly how Nuggets fans and their team probably treats that. Come on, man. It's LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And both of those guys playing at a really high level and a supporting cast that I think fits pretty well around them. Austin Reeves, I think, is significant as their next primary ball handler in the way that he played. D'Angelo Russell had the one big game, struggled shooting at other times that hurts them. You talk about X factors, he's a wild one for them because on a given night when he's stringing them together, they're really, really tough to beat. And when he's not, it's just tough. There's a hole in their offense because they can't really get that from anywhere else other than him. So that's a problem. Yes, I do think that. I do. And look, and last year was, you know, a little different road here, man. Last year you get Memphis early. They're all banged up. You don't have to deal with a healthy Memphis team. And then you get the Golden State Warriors who just looked so small in that series. And they targeted Klay and they took Klay out and they were able to take Klay out because it was, you know, he's not the same to overcome that kind of thing. And they got thrown around. They weren't big enough to play against that team, and they win that game, that series in 6 games before they run in to the Nuggets. It just so happens this year is reversed. They got Nuggets first, and they weren't able to get by them. And it's funny because you know, Mike Greenberg would get up, you know, Greeny, he said, going into that last game, sit everybody at all costs. Do not win the game if you're the Lakers. Avoid Denver at all costs. And, of course, it came up on the air. What are you going to say as an athlete? I'm saying, come on, Greeny. Like, that's not in your competitive nature to do that. Like, they're not going to actively avoid a team. What kind of message are you sending? Like, but he was right. Really, if you want to have a chance at making a run, don't play that team. Not right out of the gate. And yet, here they were. So it feels completely different. Like, wow, first round loss, last year conference finals. Well, I mean, actually, if you look at the way that they played them in this series, right, these were tough games, man. These are very – 2 of them on basically game-winning shots, one with a second and a half and one at the buzzer. I mean, that's what it took to beat them in 5, and yet it's a first-round loss, so it looks like completely different and you know, much worse outcome to your season. The truth is, no, they played the Nuggets even tougher. They just got them earlier. That's really all it was. So, yes, to your point, I agree with that. The Lakers, I think, are better than you give them credit for because their regular season typically is just a sideshow for waiting to see what it's going to look like, you know, when April 15th gets here.
And I wonder, like, look, Denver looks like if they play to the standard they set in round 1, I think the Wolves will beat them. But there is this in round 2. But I think there is something, too. The Lakers are tough, man. Anthony Davis, I mean this, I think he's the toughest player for Jokic to go up against. And Gobert is phenomenal, and they have the 2 bigs. They can do some interesting things. I don't know if that's a step up, though. It might be a step sideways in terms of a challenge for Jokic, but it's definitely not – I don't think it's a step up. Anthony Davis was a handful. He did a great job in the series putting pressure on Jokic on the other end while also guarding him on the defensive end. And, you know, I just think when you can do that to the other team's best player, it gives you a shot in a series. All right, let's talk quickly about the Lakers, though. Is this the end? LeBron James would not field a question about what his future holds in LA. I mean, surprise, surprise. This is what he always does. Puts pressure. But if you look at what you saw, LeBron is already old and getting older. Anthony Davis, to me, looks like he's at the top of his game. Is there a team to be built around this? Or do you look at this and say, as great as that duo is, you can't realistically build a successful team around them? Which way do you lean?
I think the problem they're going to, I think, you know, be careful what you wish for in terms of thinking you can build something different that's going to be as competitive as they are. I think you can build around these two guys. LeBron doing that is, like you said, it's typical. He is the most passive aggressive person I've ever seen with this kind of stuff. Like, I think he likes the attention a little bit around it, and it's going to linger now for a while. And he talked about going home and all that stuff's true, by the way. Go get back with your family, man. You got a son playing AAU, one trying to decide on what to do about the draft, daughter playing volleyball. Like, all that was true, man. And I get it as a parent. Like, season ends, it's like, okay, man, I'm on to that. But not answering that question or answering it the way that he did, he knows what he's doing. That's why he thought about it and said, I'll say the perfect thing here to get everybody kind of freaking out. And this is going to last for 2 months now as we wait and see what that's going to be. I do think you can build a team that's competitive around them. Here's the problem they're going to have repeatedly. The regular season for the Lakers with a player that's turning 40.
Yeah.
And Anthony Davis, who this year, give him credit, 76 games, that's an anomaly for him. That won't happen next year. It's just not feasible in this conference to try to come from where they are late and lap the field. Okay? It's just not possible, man. When you're going to come from the play-in, or you're going to come from the eighth spot, and this is who you could end up with when you're rolling the dice like that. You have to prioritize the regular season to give yourself an advantage early in the playoffs, to sustain some momentum, to make a run. When you're doing what they did this year in a regular season with all the injuries and just it seemingly not meaning that much to them, you set yourself up for this scenario where you get this team early. And by the way, next year, maybe it's not the Nuggets. Maybe it's a better Timberwolves team. Maybe it's a better Oklahoma City team. Right. Maybe it's a better Dallas team. These are teams that are younger with young stars that are saying, you know what, the West is ours now. And Jokic is included in that, by the way, because he's still a young star. The West is ours now. Thanks to KD, LeBron, Steph. Appreciate everything you guys did for the league. Our time is now. We're taking it. So it's not necessarily even Denver. Next year could be a different team they run into out of the eighth spot or a play-in, and you get rewarded by playing a 60-win team that's got young stars. So that's the biggest problem for the Lakers. How do you prioritize a regular season in more of a way that gives you a better chance early in the playoffs to get some momentum and make a run? That's the challenge they're going to have. LeBron and AD are still good enough at the top of their game to compete with any team in the league. Assuming that you always try to improve the surrounding parts of your roster, Adam, but I just don't think the regular season is ever going to be something that's going to position them in the best way to make a legitimate run.
Yeah, I think you're right. This team, to me, as great as LeBron James and Anthony Davis are, you have to build two teams in the NBA, an 82-game team and a 16-game team. And oftentimes you need overlap. Obviously, there's a lot of continuity there. But in the case of the Lakers, I think it's two completely different teams. And I don't know how you do that with how many holes they would have to fill. That's a tough one. All right, that's it.
Listen, last thing on this real quick. So this is going to be fascinating to watch, man. The draft is before free agency.
Yeah.
When LeBron can opt out with the 60th pick in the NBA draft, the whoever take Bronny James.
Not taking him 60th. You're not giving him a second round contract and getting LeBron. I think he has to be a first rounder, I would guess.
I don't know. Who knows what conversations take place behind the scene, man? Come on. Like, I'm just saying, and because LeBron won't have to make the opt-out decision until after that's over.
Yeah.
And you have a good idea of how that's going to go for Bronny. I'm very interested to see. Look, everybody agrees, like, he's not ready to play in the NBA right now, or maybe ever. Who knows? But that's an interesting dynamic. He was even asked about it yesterday. It's something I always thought about, but right now I'm not thinking about it as much. I don't know what that meant either. Are you not thinking right about it as much? Because it's like now you're starting to realize it's going to be a hard road for Bronny. He said, I'll let him make up his own mind, do what he wants to do with his life. Well, so all that stuff's going to factor in. I just did an interview this morning with Philadelphia. They're talking about that. Oh, should we make a run at Bronny James and get LeBron in Philly next year? It's like, come on, man. Get ready, though. That's what we're going to be talking about for the next 2 months.
Well, if you want to hear more about what Legs thinks about that, tune into ESPN every day for the next 3 months, and you'll catch his perspective on that. All right, let's take a break. On the other side, Heat and Celtics. Celtics get the win, but they lose Kristaps Porzingis in the process. How does that affect the short term and maybe even long term for them? And what can the Heat do to get back in the series? Later on, Thunder Pelicans. We'll get to that as well. First, let me tell you guys about AG1. Are you looking to mix up your diet, maybe get a little bit healthier, get rid of coffee, and have a new morning routine? Why don't you check out AG1? Not only does AG1 deliver your daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more, it's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day. They even give you a nice little water jug so you could mix it in, shake it up. You don't even have to stir, you just shake it up. Delicious, it tastes great, and it's a great way to start your day. AG1 is a supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why I'm excited to welcome them as our new partner. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packets with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/allNBA. That's drinkag1.com/allNBA. Check it out. Also want to tell you about the presenting sponsor of this show, DraftKings Sportsbook. We're almost done with the first round, ready to get into the second round. There's still the third and, of course, the finals left. And right now, if you want to bet and get in on the action, you go to DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Since the play-in tournament and all the way through to the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code ALLNBA, A-L-L-N-B-A. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Whether you win or lose, you could have even done like Emma did and bet on the Phoenix Suns in round one. And you still would have got your $200 bonus bets instantly after the four-game sweep. That's code ALLNBA on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Back here on the All-NBA Show, me and Tim Legler doing live shows 4 times a week on YouTube. But if you miss us on YouTube, you can always download the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, whatever it is. It always is published like 5 minutes right after the show, so you won't miss it. And throw us a like if you're watching in live. If you're watching late, leave us a comment. We'll check those out later on. Even Legs is checking out the comments, you guys. Let's get into the Celtics now. They dominate the Heat. They're up 10 in the end of the first quarter. They're up almost 20 at halftime, 25 going into the third. This was not a close game. They have dominated this series since game two, and we thought maybe Miami would get interesting. Turns out it's hard to make 23 three-pointers multiple times in a row. What did you see from this game? Before we get into the Kristaps part of it, what did you see from this game other than maybe Derek White going nuclear from three?
Well, I thought game three, after that loss, Boston came out and they set the tone with defensive pressure all over the floor like only they can in the Eastern Conference. And it completely just dismantled Miami offensively. And it wasn't quite that level in this game, Adam, at the start of the game. They were definitely understanding that, like, okay, we can't even think about this thing getting to 2-2. So they were definitely in a state of readiness, but it wasn't the suffocating defense I saw at the start of game three. The difference, though, was Derek White went nuts early in this game shooting a basketball, and there's a lot of things you can do to prepare for the Boston Celtics. Defensively, you know, Spo's always going to have them ready, and that team's going to compete. They're incredibly offensively challenged. I mean, it's almost sad to watch that team offensively without Jimmy Butler, without Rozier. They just don't have options to get baskets, but they're going to compete. They're going to be prepared, but you can't prepare for that. You can't prepare for Derek White getting that hot, man. And he was running into 3-point shots off transition. Like he was Klay Thompson. Like that's how fast he was letting it go. Cause he was so sure. And by the way, none of those shots in the first half touched anything but the bottom of the net. It was so pure. And he was like, he had a smile on his face at one point. They hit one and they called timeout, and he kind of had this look on his face like, guys, this is really something, huh? like, you know, because yeah, that's not Derek White's game. He's capable of being an impact player. I think he's one of the more important players in the entire conference, truthfully. But that's, you don't expect that. So that was pretty much, to me, set the tone for the night, set the tone for the game. Miami already challenged. It's going to take everything they have defensively. And now Derek White's going to go off to that extent. You're not overcoming that. So it was business-like. It was very professional approach. They were not going to let Miami get breath and get life. And now they go home and they beat their close out the deal on their home court.
Derek White, after the game, had some incredible things to say about his coach, Joe Mazzulla, saying that what he loves playing for him because he gives him such confidence. To me, it's one of the most, I think that the average fan's perspective of coaching is kind of funny because I think it's football coaching is what people think of. It's just, it's all strategic. What play and how do you do this? And what I observe from covering this league for 10 years, and I'm curious if you agree, so much of coaching is leadership, it's culture setting, and it's giving the guys the appropriate amount of confidence or discipline or whatever it is they're needed is needed. And to me, whenever I hear a player say that, that, hey, this coach is the one that has me playing confident enough to make 8 threes in a playoff game, you know, Derek White, who's been a very good player for a lot of his career, but to be that level of impact player to score 38 points, to me, I always take note of that because I think it's such an underrated thing. Some coaches suck confidence from players. Others are able to give it to them.
Single most important thing you can do as a coach. And I had this experience when I got to Washington because prior to that, I'd been at Golden State, Dallas. I had some 10 days early in my career. Then I had a couple good years in Dallas, Golden State. But at the same time, I could tell there was a closed-mindedness from the guys I was playing for that it was all tied into shot-making. Period. And so you put a lot of pressure on yourself. That's your entire worth was in their minds was dictated by that. I knew there was a lot more to my game that I could help even the nights I wasn't shooting well, but I needed somebody to see it, to believe that, to let me play through mistakes, play through missed shots. And that changed when I got to Washington and Jimmy Lynam did that for me. And I saw it right in the beginning. And about 2 weeks into camp, he came up to me one day, put his arm around me and said, you know, I didn't know enough about your all-around game. We brought you in here to shoot the ball, but you're a lot more than that. You're going to be on the court a lot for us when the game's on the line because you're a winning player and you do a lot of things that don't show up beyond your shooting. And it was like meant the world to me. You know, I was 27 years old at that point and fought my rear end off to get there and establish credibility. And by that point, people accepted, okay, this guy could definitely shoot playing the league. But this was going to be different now. I was going to take it to a totally different level. And that's the year I led the league in three-point shooting. I won the three-point shootout. Like, a lot of that had to do with Jimmy Lynam and his communication with me. And I noticed him at practice early that year talking to every single player at some point in a one-on-one basis every day at practice. He made sure he got a couple minutes with each guy, even the three or four guys we had that weren't playing. He wanted to make them – you're an important part of this. Like, I see you. You have value to me, and here's why. And I think – that's kind of what Derek White's talking about, man. And the coaches that can unlock that, it creates a mental freedom in your mind that you could play so liberated. And it's just such an incredible feeling as a player because all of these guys can play, man. They all can play. It's just a matter of feeling that. And Derek White described that. And I thought it was so important to hear because it transfers all the way down to youth coaching, man, and what you can do to a kid's confidence. And it's your job is to make them feel confident, value them for what they do well, protect them from their weaknesses. That's your job as a coach. And Derek White described Joe Mazzulla in that way.
If you told me that Derek White could have this level of impact in every series, and he's a phenomenal player all the time, but I'm saying all year long, we've talked about the Celtics in the clutch. What do they look like? And I think the ball gets stagnant. And all year long, I've said in the clutch, Derek White to me is the most important player because he's the guy that can put the downhill pressure on the rim off the dribble, which not that he needs to be the scorer, but that when you have a guy putting pressure on it in that way, it gets the defense moving and then you're getting it to all your other great scorers. So if you told me that you were going to get that Derek White once or twice in a series, I would say the Celtics are for sure winning the title. They're that talented. They have so many guys. So to see them have that in what was really a pivotal game, I know it's kind of funny to say because they're up 3-1 against an 8 seed. But if that series goes 2-2, you start to get nervous. Things get a little bit touch and go. He came up in a big moment. If you told me they had that, I would be buying the Celtics a lot more. The fact that they got it in round one, you know, definitely take note of that. Is there anything else you want to see from the? Oh, let's talk about Porzingis actually real quick. He leaves the game 14 minutes into it. Yeah. Right calf. He'll undergo imaging today. Early indications that he has not ruptured an Achilles, which obviously would be the worst news. That would keep him out not only this year, but likely all of next year as well. But that maybe it's more of a calf strain. That is the calf strain, by the way, the injury of the year in the NBA.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's like the eighth calf strain.
Yep.
But nonetheless, those are injuries that affect you. Even if you're able to play through it like the way Jamal Murray just did, it affects you. So how big? Porzingis is one of the guys where you don't have a replacement for. There's no guy like Porzingis on the roster. How big of a loss would it be, even if he's able to play but is hobbled, is not 100%?
Yeah, the calf strain is the modern-day plantar fasciitis. Do you remember when that was the thing? That was like, oh, I even dealt with it. It was like all over the
really?
League. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was interesting because it was the most incredible pain I've ever felt, right at the bottom of the center of my heel. It felt like there was a rock in my shoe at all times. And there's a couple ways to handle it, man. You could kind of treat it for a couple months, and it probably won't go away. And you come back to try to play, it's going to come right back. Or you get surgery, which my teammate Mark Price did at the same time, was dealing with it in Washington at the very end of his career. He got the surgery. He missed the entire year. I had mine rupture in a drill in practice in training camp. I was back in 2 weeks because the surgery, he had to deal with scar tissue. Anyway, that's a different story, but That was the injury of the day, right? Everybody was getting plantar fat. That's the same thing with the calf strain. I agree with you. Here's what's kind of weird about this. Going into the game, I watched in the beginning of the game, his left calf had that black tape down the back of it, right? Because that was clearly the calf that had been bothering him. The right leg had a full body, had full sleeve on it. Well, earlier, he pulled up and grabbed his right leg. And was like, oh, you know, like, and I was going to set a screen. It was kind of like, wow. And then he kind of walked it off, but it was weird. And then 2 minutes later, he grabs his left calf. And I'm like, what is wrong with this guy's calves? Like, both of them are jacked up. And look, by the way, isn't that kind of a similar reaction to what Giannis had?
Yeah.
But guess what? We're still waiting for Giannis. How long has it been now?
Yeah.
How long is Giannis? Yeah. When did that happen? 2 weeks ago? Three?
Maybe more. Maybe three, yeah.
I mean, and look, we, you know, this is the interesting thing about that series. At any point, because he's over there, he's on the bench, he's cheering his team. At any point, he's going to run on the court before a game. And we're like, when? Nobody knows. But the fact that he's been out that long, that's not a great sign for the Celtics. And Porzingis, by the way, put his jersey up over his head, leaving the court. That's a telltale sign. Nobody knows better than the athlete what's going on, what he feels. It's scary. He feels something that is very concerning to him. Who knows when we get him back? That is a major storyline. Can they get by Orlando or Cleveland without Kristaps Porzingis? Yes. And they probably can even win the next round without him. There's a very good chance of that. But I don't think you're winning an NBA championship without Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah. But even the next round, so they, you know, a little bit of luck here in that, look, the Cavs and the Magic, I don't want to disparage them, but they're flawed teams. Both of those are flawed teams. You know, but Porzingis, if he were to miss that whole series, I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves. They still have to close out Miami. But do you see this as, hey, they have a lucky break because they wouldn't face, you know, the Knicks or the Sixers or whoever comes out of that side. They wouldn't face them to the conference finals. So maybe you have a flawed roster that you would go up in round two and you could survive that to allow them to get back. Or am I getting too far ahead of myself even thinking about this stuff?
Probably, yeah, probably. I mean, I the thing is, you got to get more information and find out, and it's been a little bit slow. They're probably trying to figure out exactly what the deal is. By the way, Toby in the chat, thank you for the up for the information. It's 3 weeks today. Giannis got hurt. So we're at 3 weeks. Clock is still ticking. They're down 3-1, by the way. They're now in a perilous situation to lose this series. So obviously, he's going to do anything he can to prevent that. If he could play, he's going to play, even if he's limited. The fact that he's not out there tells you, man, he's still feeling something he is not comfortable with. So that's not exactly a great sign for Kristaps Porzingis and the Boston Celtics going forward.
We got to keep it moving here because we've only got about 12 minutes, but the Thunder close out the Pelicans in an ugly game last night, 97-89. Brandon Ingram, your guy, goes for 8 points in this one on 2-of-14 shooting, 4 rebounds, 6 assists. He was rough in a closeout game, maybe his last of the Pelicans, but the Thunder to me are the story. Lu Dort and the defensive job he has done all series has been impressive. He's one of, if not the best on-ball defenders in all of the NBA. And then this young team just continues to play this balanced style. Everybody, all the starters in double figures. How impressed are you with what the Thunder did? I mean, the Pelicans are probably the worst team in the Western Conference to make the playoffs without Zion. But nonetheless, a sweep is a sweep, and they took care of business.
Yeah, and look, obviously that's disappointing. Brandon Ingram, I mean, you know, come on. Zion's out. You got to be better than 2 for 14 from the field. But credit Oklahoma City's defense. They've got some guys to throw at him. I thought Brandon Ingram, very good. There's a very good chance. Last night after the game when he got home, he woke up in a cold sweat screaming out Lou Dort's name because he did not want to see Dort. He did not want to see him anymore. There's post-traumatic stress disorder he's going to have from Lou Dort, who was inside of his jersey and physically chesting him up and beating him up as much as he could. And by the way, if he got screened off and handed him off, okay, well, let's hand him off to Jalen Williams. Let's hand him off to Wiggins. Let's hand him off to these number of guys that they have that are good defenders that dig in and a very good team concept. And if you do funnel them to the rim, Chet's back there. So let's give them credit for it. But, you know, bottom line, man, you're an elite scorer. You got to show up better than that in a game that your team has to have. Super impressed with Oklahoma City. The balance, the how complete they are on both ends. And, you know, you look at a game like last night, Giddey goes 4 for 6 from the three. You know, Dort makes a cut. He goes 6 for 11 between the two of them. And I've talked about this before. If it was a more surefire thing, like I would think, man, this team could potentially really challenge the Nuggets or maybe get to the finals. I still think they're a year away from like that level, but they got to add a little bit more, I think, shooting of guys that can really fill it up with some length in those two spots in particular. But on a night when Giddey goes 4 for 6 from the three, that's a massive bonus for them. Everybody in the starting lineup, double figures. They only got 10 points off their bench. They didn't need it because their starters are so good. I'm very impressed, man. It was a very serious approach. Do not let this go on beyond tonight. We're a better team. They're limited. They're wounded. End it. Take care of business, and they did. And impressive. And now they sit back and wait to see if it's going to be Dallas or the Clippers.
For a young team like the Thunder, I think that was a perfect first-round matchup, an equally young and inexperienced playoff team in the Thunder. It allowed you to sort of set, you know, get your feet wet into this environment. I thought they did a great job. For me, the real test comes in the next round, whether it's the Clippers or the Mavs. That'll be the one that really shows us how ready the Thunder are to make a run in the playoffs. And I'm excited for it. I'm not trying to take anything away from them. They did exactly what they were supposed to do, a 4-0 sweep, and a lot of those were comfortable wins. On the Pelican side, we've talked about them all year. Here's the thing. A team runs its course. And to me, Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, you told me they were going to be healthy, if you told me they were going to be this or that, at a certain point you go, you can't just keep waiting around for it. To me, nope. I think that the Pelicans have to make a major move this offseason. They can't just, okay, we need a new coach, or we need to move some, maybe we trade around a McCollum or this or that. I think one of Ingram or Zion has to go. I think it's really hard to know, you know, to bet on Zion just because of how often he is out of shape and how often he is injured. But to me, I think if I was New Orleans, there's no question this would have been the last time I saw Brandon Ingram wearing the Pelicans jersey. What do you think?
Completely agree with you. And he's got one more year left in his deal at $36 million, but that's why it becomes a likely scenario because, number one, look, if a team's going to just go for it in a given year, like they're close, they need more length, they need another scorer that can get his own shot. Brandon Ingram still can do that, and then he's an expiring contract for you. So I think this is finally the time that you would look into something like that. I mean, CJ McCollum is another interesting one, man. He's got 2 more years after this. CJ McCollum is definitely like, I love CJ McCollum's game. I love when he's paired with Lillard. He was really clutch, and he was such a great running mate for him. You know, and they were such a tandem in the backcourt because they were both kind of 1-2 combos. He's definitely just not anywhere near as consistent as he used to be. And so that's something else you look at. He's a veteran guy, man. Got a lot of playoff experience. He can score. He can handle the ball, run a team a little bit. Is that something else you look at? Do you completely look at going in a different direction in who you put around Zion Williamson? It's not going to be Zion, right? He's your draw. You know, it stinks what happened to him at the end of the year, but a lot of people loved the way he played this year. And of course he had that huge playoff game before he got hurt. So I think that he's like your foundation. Everything around him is up for negotiation. I mean, I like Murphy, obviously. I don't think he's going anywhere. Herb Jones. Those guys are really important. Alvarado, like those guys are really important. I'm talking about your other two main primary offensive threats. Do you look at something different? And moving CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram, moving on from this trio and building a different team around Zion.
to me, it's a no-brainer. I still think Zion you have to rely on. People in the chat and perhaps people following the Pelicans more closely, or maybe that's their team, saying that they believe the organization values Brandon Ingram more. That's insane to me. Brandon Ingram's my one of the – he's a bottom five player that I would most want to trust. My job, if I was a front office person, that's not a guy I would stake my job on. And if I was a fan, it's not a guy I would stake, you know, my title odds on. So we'll see what happens there. Interesting offseason for them.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
All right, let's get to our final segment here where we look ahead to the weekend and check out the odds on tonight's game. I'm sorry, not the weekend, onto the night slate and look at the odds from DraftKings Sportsbook. This segment, of course, is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. We've got the 76ers and the Knicks tonight. The Knicks are favored to close this thing out, 4.5-point favorites. Legs, what do you think about that, and what do you want to see tonight in that game from the 76ers and the Knicks?
Well, I don't know if you saw the reports, but you're hearing some stuff. Keith Pompey, who follows the team, was that shoot around and posted. Joel Embiid did not participate, did not show up to shoot around with a migraine headache. And Kelly Oubre has some sort of illness. He didn't come to shoot around. All right, your season's on the line. The series has been a war. It's going to be a war in Madison Square Garden tonight. That doesn't exactly sound like Braveheart grabbing the flag and running over the hill. I mean, you know, it sounds like a mindset, right, of inevitability, and that's not a great sign. Look, do I expect them both to play? I have no idea. Hopefully, and you'd have to be, you know, missing a limb to not participate in this game tonight with your season on the line. But you can imagine how Philadelphia fans reacted today hearing that news, and Philadelphia sports media is crushing them right now. So that's not a great sign for what we're about to see tonight. If they both play, it's going to come down to what the other games have come down to, Adam. A handful of possessions most likely in late or throughout the game where the Sixers have come up small in these areas, keeping guards and wings off the offensive glass. All right, Josh Hart and Anunoby and even DiVincenzo, those guys are killing them by running in and getting second shots. Their offensive execution in tight spots, it was an abomination the last 6 minutes of the game the other night of what they were trying to execute with Joel Embiid, a non-factor, basically standing on the perimeter or standing in the corner. No idea what they were trying to accomplish. They've got to obviously also, you got to start doing something different with Jalen Brunson. I mean, the guy is treating them like Luka treats people, like Jokic treats people, like LeBron treats people. And I'm not saying he's not a great player, because he is. He's proven he's a great player. He is absolutely a one-man wrecking ball for that team offensively. You got to cut the head off the snake off. So let's see what the Sixers do to adjust, because these are winnable games. And you're talking about it's going to be close. Make the plays, get it back to Philly. You're down 3-2. You know, win a home game, you're in a game seven. I mean, that's kind of how you have to think. It's not like they've been smoked three times. This is a very close series. You can win a game and get this thing back to Philadelphia. But I don't like what I'm hearing about guys not being a shoot around and they've got headaches and illnesses, man, going into this game. That's just not what you want to hear if you're Tyrese Maxey, if you're Nick Nurse.
No. And last night, and by the way, Embiid has played through a lot. This Bell's palsy, you know, the injury to the knee, like you give him credit because he has been going to battle. But Jamal Murray had this quote last night. The team told Jamal, by the way, you're out. You're not playing. And he said, you're not keeping me out from this game. He said, I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I wasn't able to play this game. That quote tells you what a competitor is. I wouldn't be able to live with myself.
Yeah. How about that? And by the way, I love their description. Both guys used the same word. They said it was an emotional, you know, situation. You know what the emotional situation means? That means Jamal Murray dropped 27 expletives. That's what that means when they try to tell him he wasn't going to play. That's what the emotional conversation, I'm telling you right now, that was. Well, listen, here's what we're thinking. And then several F-bombs dropped. And next thing you know, Jamal Murray's running out there out of the tunnel. That's what that was. You know, you got to fight, right? You got to fight in some situations. And look, I know people think, oh, you know, they take it out of the coach's hands and the medical staff has all the say. At the end of the day, if you're a star, particularly if you're a star player, and you tell them flat out, I'm playing, just drop it right now, you're going to be on the court. You're going to be on the court. And that's what Jamal Murray fought for last night. And thank goodness he did, because otherwise we'd be going back to L.A. for a game six.
The Pacers are favored against the Bucks, so they're favored to close it out. 4-point favorites here. What do you want to see in this game, and what do you expect?
Yeah, look, I've been impressed with the Pacers' others making shots. They're a deeper team than just Halliburton and Siakam, and I think they've been showing that. I thought Nembhard's been fantastic in this series. Nesmith's been great. Miles Turner's been tremendous for them so far. You don't know when you're going to see Giannis. And I don't even know, is there an update on Lillard? Is he going tonight?
I don't know what the latest is on
and
Lillard.
Middleton, they got all three of their top guys are hurt. So I'd like to get if we can, real quick before we go off the air, Emma, tell me about those three guys and they're playing tonight. Giannis, you know, at any point, he's going to play. So if you're the Pacers, while there's doubt in the air, you need to end this series. Because if they lose this game somehow, and then Giannis and Lillard make an appearance here at the end, they can flip the switch, obviously, flip the script on this series. So Pacers need to get it over with. I picked them to win the series, Adam, and I think that they will. They're more complete. They're more whole. They're healthier. And they play a really tough style of basketball to defend for Milwaukee.
Looks like latest report is doubtful for Dame. So maybe that one just finishes out. But the game of the night legs.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
You might disagree, but to me, it's the game of the night, the Cavs and the Magic. The Cavs just got blown out two times in a row. Twice they got blown out in Orlando, and yet they're 5-point favorites. This is the one. I would be so disappointed if this series follows the same script as the first four. At some point, a road team has to make a run. I think tonight's the night. I love the Orlando Magic. It's my team. I think tonight's the night they make the run and make the series significantly more interesting.
All right, Adam, you ready for this stat? Four games played, there has been one lead change.
Was it six? It was probably 6-7 or
something.
I didn't even go back and hunt
when it was. I wish I had done more research. That would be pretty funny, right? 13-12, game two. One lead change in four games?
Yeah.
And it's 2-2? Like, you would expect that maybe if it was a 4-0 sweep and it was just a total mismatch and annihilation. It's a 2-2 series. Like, we're talking any other series that's been played, right? Since I've been at ESPN, 2-2. Get me a seat by the TV with a bucket of popcorn, man. This is it. And yet, I feel like I don't have any feel for that series at all. That's why I'm really dying to, and I will be tonight, watching that game in its entirety. I expect to be talking about that game on SVP tonight afterwards, because I have not talked about that series on the air yet. I'm looking to do it tonight after the game, and I'm going to watch every play of that game, and hopefully we get some drama. Give me some drama in this series. My goodness, you would think we're due, right? So tonight it has to happen.
Franz Wagner had been in a mini slump, and he just went for 34 points on 13 of 17 shooting. One game sometimes can bust you out of a slump, and I'm hopeful that tonight is the night for Franz Wagner where he strings together a couple in a row. All right, you can hit that outro music, Emma, but we have a couple super chats to get through here, legs. The people are super chatting us here. Psycho Blue says, Basketball Cthulhu thinks the Nuggets need to stop playing with their food and put the pedal to the metal. They shouldn't have gotten so close. The T-Wolves are peaking at the right time. 100% agree that the Timberwolves are peaking at the right time, that they have sort of been good all year, but seem to be coming together. The vibe with that team is great. But at the same time, every series has its own personality, legs. I'm such a believer in this. You go to game 7 in one round, it does not mean you're going to go to game 7 in the next. you sweep in the first round, it doesn't mean you're going to sweep in the next. I think this series will have its own personality, and both teams will look different in certain ways.
I completely agree, and I think here's the good news for Denver. 4 days off. Four full yep. days off to get your legs energized, to anybody that's dinged up to get better. And I predict that that will be the best series of the entire postseason, including the NBA Finals.
I kind of think the team that comes out of that is going to win the finals, but we'll see. Hotspot Casino says, if OKC and Denver get out of the second round, OKC will beat Denver. They're equipped matchup-wise to beat Denver. Dort dominates Murray. Plus, OKC has already beat them three times. A spade is a spade. Shrug emoji. What do you think, Legs?
Well, first of all, I think OKC is going to have their work cut out for them against either Dallas or the Clippers, because I like Dallas to go to the conference finals. Obviously, they were not ready to play the other night, started that game defensively, and now they've dug themselves this hole. It's a best of three series. Two of those is going to be in L.A. I don't know if Dallas can dig out, but whoever wins that series, I think that's going to be a very challenging series for Oklahoma City. They might answer the bell in a big way, but either way, I don't think they're beating Denver. I still believe Denver ends up in the NBA Finals.
What's next? Jay Rich says, just saw a dope Jamal Murray made a shot shirt on Etsy in a shop selling fictional yoke horse merch. Hey, guys, dnvrlocker.com. Support this show and this network, the All City Wet Network. dnvrlocker.com has that shirt you're talking about. Etsy just steals them. What else do we have? Jay Money says, who gives the C's more trouble, Knicks or Pacers? What do you think, Legs?
Probably the Knicks, but I'm telling you this. I think the Pacers, they survive this and they get through this Milwaukee series. I think the Pacers have a great shot in the next round. I just think that they have a style of play and they're whole right now. And I think that the Pacers are going to be a difficult matchup in that next round, and wouldn't be shocked if the Indiana Pacers end up in the conference finals against Boston.
That does it for today. We're off tomorrow, but we're back Thursday, everybody. Thanks for watching the show. Hit the like button on the way out. We'll see you guys next time. The mayor.